This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
Conversation with Elizabeth Mdunga this morning and across the continent. We're going right into Kenya and we're saying know yourself better and help others. And it took the likes of Elizabeth, 15 years for her father to be diagnosed with Alzheimer's after he began forgetting what day it was. I can imagine that is it's quite a traumatic process, right? And this is why then Alzheimer's will be considered to be a family disease or a family affecting lived reality. And we're going to find out a whole lot more from Elizabeth as to, how do we even identify Alzheimer's? Where do people go for aid? And as a family, how do you take that? Elizabeth, a very good morning and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
We appreciate you. Elizabeth, now, on the conversation around Alzheimer's, before we even go into definition level, this is something that you experience very close to you. And I think interestingly for me is that you experience, but you're a psychologist yourself at the same time. Can you take us through just the journey of getting to the point of your father's diagnosis?
So what we started noticing was the changes in his personality and behavior. And one of the things that was very evident was my dad loved educating his children. And so when my younger sister was going to Form 1, that is high school, my father tells her that you're not supposed to be going to high school. You're supposed to sit at home and wait for your husband to come and marry you. And we're wondering, because that time I was already in Form 4, and I'm wondering, what's going on? I mean, he has only educated us, and then here he is telling her that she has to wait for her husband to come. So he's gone back to the old ways of thinking, where girls were not supposed to go to school. And then he started selling the car in parts. He would sell the tires alone, the rest of the vehicle alone, which was quite strange.
Mm.
And then also he would start wearing his clothes, and then he wears pajamas on top, which is not what you would do when you're going somewhere. So those are the strange things that we had started seeing. He moved us from a four-bedroom Achanet house to a... to an iron sheet building around the corner. So he was just doing
strange
things, yeah.
So wait, all these are happening, and what's the conversation you're having with him?
No, we're just wondering what's going on, and he's become very violent. He doesn't want to have a conversation with us, which was unlike him because he was a very calm person. He was a policeman by profession, but also very loving father all this time. So you're wondering what's going on, what has changed him. So initially, we thought maybe he had had a mental illness, or was this something going on that we're not understanding? So we couldn't even have a proper conversation because he would wake up on a Tuesday, he says it's a Sunday, he wants to go to church. So all these things are strange things that you have never seen before.
Sure. But tell me then, I mean, this is somebody who's become aggressive. This is somebody whose personality, although in their natural gentleness, their personality has completely changed, right? And I would imagine then taking them for medical assessment would be difficult. How did you go about that?
So it took us quite a while because initially in Kenya, he got around the 90s. So nobody knew about dementia then. And so he took us about 15 years to actually get a diagnosis. So every time we'd go, because he had diabetes, so we'd go for the diabetes clinic. But one day we mentioned to the doctor and said, we have noticed these changes. Would you please, what is going on? So that's what they said, have you heard of Alzheimer's? And so we're like, what? We had never even heard of this. And so that is now how we got a diagnosis 15 years later.
Sure. But now tell me, I mean, in your field, because now that's your field, was there any relationship between you going into the field and your experience at home?
Yes, that is now what made me do what I do, because I did not want another family to take that long. Because for us, it took us 15 years to get that diagnosis, and within the 17th year, he rested. And so we did not want another family to take that long to try and understand the condition and then don't know what to do next. So that is why it pushed me to start the organization to help other families and other caregivers get the support that they require.
Elizabeth, How prevalent is Alzheimer's across the continent? Or do we have a view of numbers? Is it difficult to have a view of numbers as a result of sort of people being unsuspecting that it could be it?
Like, do we have numbers in Kenya?
No, no, across the continent. You know, do we have a view of the prevalence of Alzheimer's across the continent?
Rarely, because one of the reasons why people don't talk about it, because of stigma, a lot of families do not come out into the open and speak about it. So we do not have proper numbers because a lot of people still feel either it's witchcraft or you must have done something wrong to the gods, so you're getting punished for it. So we do not have numbers, and that is why we are insisting and trying to bring it up and saying it is important that we as Africa, we start speaking about this condition because our loved ones are being affected. Because initially, a lot of people thought it's a Western disease, but that's not the case.
But yeah. Now, how do you support, you know, once you found out that your family member, and before I even go there, when Elizabeth, you know, Alzheimer's, is it something that impacts only the elderly or can it be found amongst the younger?
So we've had cases, especially in Kenya, where we've had people who are in their 40s getting dementia. So we are having younger people now getting it. So it's not a disease for the elderly, and a lot of people also believe it's an old age disease, which is not the case. It's a disease, and we know even people who are even 90 who still are very okay, who do not have dementia. So we cannot say it's only for the older persons. No, we're also having younger people getting dementia now.
Which is quite interesting because we've always imagined it to be quite an illness for, or lived reality for the elderly. But now my next question is that how do you then support a loved one who's living with Alzheimer's, especially when you can't afford to put them through a home, for example, where they can get specialized and professional care?
So how we help our caregivers is by giving them training. And one of the things that we tell them, the first thing is communication. Learn how to communicate with them. Don't fight them. Don't argue with them. The only thing that you can give to your loved one is love. There is really nothing much more that you can give. So once they are comfortable, they do not demand a lot. When they are comfortable and they're in their world and they're at peace, they will rarely be aggressive. They'll not be pushy. They will not fight you back. But they're not comfortable, then you know there's a problem. So just learn to observe them. If you notice maybe they're not eating very well, then maybe they're not very well, and then maybe take them to hospital for them to be checked. But the best thing you can do for them is just give them the comfortable life and just be there for them and just appreciate them every time, whether they are responding or not. Just tell them how you love them and you appreciate that they are still there with you.
0861-987-000. You're doing some amazing work, Elizabeth Egg, you know, with the organization and all the research and work towards science and development that you're doing in this particular field, so much so that you've earned, you know, the nod as a role model for science, for SciDev.net, which I believe that is the leading source of news on science and technology. And a lot of research just goes into there from, you know, people from different, from alumni, I mean, from academia rather, and people in industry as well. Tell us about that.
So what we're doing is just we are trying to make sure that we now research more, and we're also involved with a project called STRIDE, which is strengthening development of dementia in developing countries also. So we are trying to ensure that we do research so that we can get to understand more and more, because the literature that is out there is not what we are experiencing here in Africa. So we have to have our own literature in Africa where we understand and we can correlate. And I work a lot with the rest of the African chapters, dementia chapters in Africa, and talk up to each other and support each other and try and understand what are your challenges, how best can we deal with challenges as Africa. So those are some of the things that we are trying to do to make it better for our brothers and sisters in Africa to understand the condition better. So we're trying to do what we can a day at a time. Yeah,
absolutely. And I mean, you happen to be working, as you said, across the continent, and with the World Health Organization having identified 2021 as a very significant year to focus on mental health. What's the pickup? Yeah. Or what's your observation on sub-Saharan Africa and essentially then encouraging young people in sub-Saharan Africa to follow in the footsteps, right, where they contribute to a platform such as SciDev and develop research that really comes in handy and helpful for our communities? Is there that platform?
There are many platforms. In Africa, we need to develop our own, but there are many in the outside world. Mm. But one of the things that we need to do as Africa is to come up together and start talking about mental health. Mm. Because if we do not do it as young people and have conversations from as young as possible, so that we can be able to have this conversation with everybody. The other day I was speaking to children who are in nursery and I was telling them the importance of their brain and what they need to do to take care of themselves. Mm. So we need to start having this conversation as even as early as kindergarten, if we can, in a language that they can understand, so that we are all on the same boat and we can start realizing that this is not a taboo subject to have. It is okay. It is okay not to be okay. And so it is okay to have conversations and saying, you know what, we as Africa, why don't we be ahead and ensure that even as young people, we are at the forefront of supporting our loved ones, our brothers and sisters, telling them the harm, if it is because of drugs, let's reduce or stop altogether the use of drugs, for example. It is important that we actually have this conversation.
Absolutely. Yeah. And now, you know, for people who would like to follow in your work there, Elizabeth, and just learn a little bit more around the research that you're doing, and I think, you know, teachings around dementia and Alzheimer's, which I think has become so extremely and pertinently important, especially for people who haven't found means and ways to access the medical help, financially especially.
What was your question?
Your guide on, you know, towards that group of people, essentially, you know, what is it they should be looking for to, especially people who have, I think, limited financial access to help around dementia and Alzheimer's? What should they do, and what's the first step that they should check if they are a bit suspecting of their loved one?
So I think the first step is just to understand the condition. I know it's very expensive to get a neurologist to check on their loved one. It can be quite costly. But one of the things that we encourage people is that if you cannot get a diagnosis completely, for us, there's a doctor who we work with, and if it is a genuine case of them not being able to have diagnosis, he will help out. And there are people who are out there, and even if it's a really genuine case, we will raise the money to be able to support you. But also, the other thing is, if you start noticing the symptoms, then start putting systems in place, slowly, slowly. I know it's not an easy disease to deal with. It's a very, it's emotionally involving, financial, I mean, physical. It is all the spheres of your life, both as a caregiver and the person living with the condition. But we just do what we can slowly to ensure that we are helping our loved one. And then also you as a caregiver, you get the support. And if you're not even able to have a test done, you join a support group where you can have somebody else direct you or walk with you and just tell you what to do when you're at a certain stage of your life. Then that also will help you give better care.
Absolutely. Elizabeth, thank you so much, and have yourself a beautiful day ahead.
Thank you so much for having me. Appreciate you.
That's Elizabeth Mutunga. They're live from Kenya.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.